Ganley, this is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange, and here's just a sample of some of the major stories covered this week on NHPR.
These weapons, then, by creating a more chaotic situation in a war-torn nation, we risk that we cannot contain these weapons.
Roy instead is proposing a plan called Direct Care New Hampshire. The state would spend $46 million per year on coverage for about 11,000 residents who don't qualify for Medicaid and would otherwise have no insurance.
A human infection is not necessarily surprising, but, you know, it is the first of the year that we are seeing, and so we do want to remind people that they need to continue to take their precautions against mosquito bites.
And this bear cat is really just a small sliver of a much bigger problem in this country.
That was New Hampshire Congresswoman Ann McLean Custer, NHPR health reporter Todd Bookman, disease surveillance coordinator Whitney Howe, Carla Gericke of the Free State Project, and the playing of taps in Derry commemorating 9/11. With all that went on this week, two headlines captured a lot of attention in the Granite State. First, Syria and our congressional delegation's response to this evolving story of possible military strikes, and then last-minute diplomacy. The other is the Affordable Care Act and its health insurance marketplaces called exchanges, which begin enrollment October 1st. Late last week, the only insurer participating in New Hampshire, Anthem, unveiled its exchange product with lower costs but limits on where patients could seek care. That move drew a lot of criticism, and this week Anthem added a few more hospitals to its network, while another insurer said it'll likely jump into this market, although nowhere near the October deadline. Again, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange. We'll cover these stories and more. Let's hear from you, your thoughts about these headlines and other news items that caught your attention. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. We have three guests for the roundup this morning. Kevin Landergan is here, political reporter for the Telegraph of Nashua. Kevin, great to see you. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Laura.
Also with us, Gary Reno, State House reporter for the Union Leader, New Hampshire Sunday News. And Gary, welcome back. Good to see you, too.
Good to see you, Laura.
And also with us, Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, thanks for being here.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, and all of you, let's talk about these health insurance exchanges. Tons of coverage as this October enrollment deadline approaches. And Dean, the fallout from Anthem's announcement on its new health exchange product for sure created waves here in the Granite State. Just back up, Dean, remind us what these exchanges are, what role they play in this bigger picture of Obamacare.
Sure. Well, you know, one of the goals of Obamacare, of the Affordable Care Act, was to provide health insurance for all Americans. So under the law, if you currently do not have health care insurance, you're going to be required to purchase insurance on these. You can either purchase it on your own privately, or you can buy it through these health exchanges or health marketplaces that go online on October 1st. And, you know, assumption is if you don't have insurance, I think you're going to have to pay a fine. So you have to choose between paying a fine or actually buying insurance. So for uninsured individuals, they can go to these health exchanges and they can, in theory, choose from a menu of products. As you mentioned, right now we only have Anthem as the single provider in the exchange. And what we're seeing here is that insurance providers are going online with narrowed networks. So you remember President Obama said that, you know, if you have your doctor, you'll be able to keep your doctor. That doesn't necessarily apply to people who don't have insurance. When you go into these exchanges and buy insurance, the insurer has a say in you know, which hospitals you go to, which providers you go to. And as you mentioned, Anthem, when it announced its network, it was actually roughly 10 hospitals fewer than its traditional product, and now they've added a few back in. We also had an announcement that Dartmouth-Hitchcock and Elliott Health Systems are going to partner with Harvard Pilgrim, I believe, next year in a very narrow network of only 5 hospitals, I believe, in New Hampshire. So, you know, the issue is the assumption underlying all this is that for people who don't have insurance, their choices are largely going to be driven by cost. Anthem has said that the product they're going to offer in the health exchange is 25% cheaper than a traditional product. The Dartmouth-Hitchcock Elliott product, I think, is going to cut costs by about 10%.
Yeah, and Kevin Landrigan, you know, there was some backlash both against this Anthem decision, and also Democrats in the State House paid a political price. They got a lot of criticism. You said Obamacare wouldn't shrink access, and look, here it has. In fairness, though, Anthem said, look, we surveyed our customers, and they said they care a lot more about cost than access. If they have to drive a little bit, oh well.
Yeah, that's right. Certainly, one of the ways in which Republicans seize the political offensive here is that it doesn't just involve people who don't have insurance. All customers of Anthem that now have individual insurance will be folded into this narrower network. So these are folks who used to have their doctor, used to have their hospital, used to have their health plan, and it's going to change.
I see. So it's not just new customers. It's people who have individual insurance.
With Anthem. And about a third of those people, it's about 40,000 in the state, will be exempt from that policy, either if they have chronic conditions, if they've been on their health plan since prior to Obamacare passing Congress in 2010. But it's the rest of the folks who are going to face a lot of change. There's certainly this micro debate about the exchanges, but at the end of the day, what is most alarming, I think, to policymakers is this is signifying what will likely be a brave new world in healthcare post the Affordable Care Act, perhaps for everyone, which is to say, with Anthem using their individual customers with this narrower network in order to drive down costs, what prevents them in the future from going to even major employers and essentially saying this? You have two choices. We can rewrite your health care plan with your existing network, and your rates will go up 30%. Or you can choose this health care plan with fewer hospitals, fewer physician practices, and it will only go up 10%. What will most employers do,
wow,
given that choice?
Well, it's a big, big story, and we're going to be covering it next week on the exchange. So we'll get into it more at that point. But you're right, Kevin. It's part of a bigger shakeout that we're seeing. The phone number for you to join us with your questions and comments is 1-800-892-6477. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in the exchange, and we're covering some of the top stories of the week. We'd love to hear from you at 1-800-892-6477. Send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. Another healthcare story, again related to the Affordable Care Act, gentlemen, also created a lot of headlines this week. And Gary Raynor, you were there, so I want to turn to you first. This is this Special Commission on Medicaid Expansion meeting all summer. They wrapped up phase one this week, hearing testimony from all sorts of interested parties. Just remind us what the goal of this group is and what they've done so far, Gary.
Well, what they've done so far is hear from a whole lot of people, a lot of experts, national, local, a lot of providers and so on, about expanding Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act to 138% of the poverty level. What has been going on in New Hampshire is Governor Maggie Hassan in a democratically controlled House want to expand Medicaid the way it is, just simply go to the 138% of poverty for eligibility.
And we should say, Gary, about 20 states have said, yeah, we're going to go this route, and about 20 states have said, no, we're not, and a few are still in the middle,
like New Hampshire.
Sure, go ahead.
The Republican-controlled Senate basically said, no, we want some more time. And what they're really looking at now is using the private sector, much like Arkansas proposed, to bring these people in under the Medicaid program. So they would be paid, the premiums would be paid by Medicaid, but they would be private health insurance that would cover them. And so the last meeting that they had this week, which is the last one they're taking the testimony, they brought in a consultant. Well, he's a consulting. Well, he has a blog on Forbes. He's in a think tank, a conservative think tank. His name is Ovik Roy, and he threw out this proposal, which is unclear whether he had actually worked with people closely in New Hampshire or just had some sort of broad outline. But he threw out this proposal that basically said, in the out years, it's going to cost $46 million for New Hampshire to fund expanded Medicaid. Why don't we take that money and see what we can do with it here?
So don't take any federal money. Just create our own program.
Program here. And a program basically would provide insurance to about 11,000 people who otherwise wouldn't qualify. It would provide catastrophic insurance for major issues such as a major cancer, some major surgery, so on, and set up this network of primary care physicians that the Medicaid program would basically pay $100 a month as a kind of a retainer to. And you would have a work requirement and high deductibles of about $6,000.
So you have to spend $6,000 worth of your own money before the insurance would kick in.
It also would have copays. And the reaction, the Senate president pretty much came out and said, well, this is a good opportunity. This is a starting point. And the Democrats pounced.
All right. And I want to ask about that in just a minute, but also invite our listeners to join us at 1-800-892-6477. And we've got a call from Queechee, Vermont. Philip is on the air. Hey, Philip, thanks for joining us on the New Hampshire News Roundup.
How you doing? This is a great subject, and I'm glad you're talking about it and letting people hear this information. You know, I was just listening to you guys talk about Anthem and how people are going to have to change doctors, and the product's not ideal right now. But this is the start of a new thing. We're moving down the road right now into we're moving healthcare in a different direction, and maybe it's not perfect right now. What this Anthem thing, it lets other carriers come into the market and say, hey, Anthem doesn't have it right. I think I can give you a better product at a better price. And they're going to start taking market share from Anthem is what I'm hoping in the future. And they're coming in with a better product. And then either Anthem has to change their product and give a better product to their clients, or they're going to be washed out of the healthcare system.
So this is getting the market to work the way it should. Sounds like what you're saying there, Philip. Yeah, we're heading into a break, Philip, so I'm going to let you go. But Dean Spiliotis, what do you think? Thanks a lot for calling, Philip.
Yeah, I mean, that is basically the market logic behind the exchanges is you know, consumers should have a range of choices depending on how much they want to pay, what kind of coverage they want, how high they want their deductibles to be. And if you don't provide a good product at a fair cost, you're going to lose business. So, you know, part of the problem with all of this is that we don't really know exactly what's going to happen. And I think, as Philip noted, it is going to kind of evolve over time. I think the interesting thing about this proposal from the fellow at the Manhattan Institute is it gives Republicans kind of a last-minute opportunity to sort of further extend this to a focus on privatization, which is really where they want to go.
All right. We'll talk more after a short break. Philip, again, thanks for that call. We'll take more of your calls, 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And you're invited to join the Walter Peterson Legacy Society by including NHPR in your estate plan. When you do, you help ensure our on-air service to the New Hampshire community for years to come. More information about the Walter Peterson Legacy Society and our many planned giving options, you can visit nhpr.org. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and the Courier Museum of Art in Manchester, presenting visual dispatches from the Vietnam War, featuring photographs that moved a generation. Details at courier.org. From Elliott Gastroenterology and Endoscopy, treating individuals with diseases of the stomach, esophagus, and colon, at Elliott at River's Edge in Manchester, elliottriversedge.org. And Heritage Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, offering tune-ups, repairs, and efficient air conditioning systems, including ductless AC for homes without ductwork, online at justcallheritage.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. We're looking at some of the top stories of the week from coming deadlines for the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. We've been talking about that. Some big changes in New Hampshire, as we've been hearing about. A little bit later on, we'll talk about New Hampshire's congressional delegation and its response to this evolving diplomatic situation in Syria. That and other stories we'll be talking about. And we'd love to hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. Send short email to exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. For our roundup this week, we have Kevin Landrigan, political reporter for the Telegraph of Nashua, Gary Reno from the Union Leader, and Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University. And before we go back to our listeners, Kevin, I did want to get you in also on this Medicaid expansion discussion at the State House this week. This conservative alternative that was laid out as a way for New Hampshire to do Medicaid expansion in its own way. And as Gary Reno mentioned, Democrats pounced on this thing. How come?
Well, essentially their argument is that, look, this would cost the state of New Hampshire taxpayers more money to cover fewer people than if we expanded Medicaid with less coverage for those folks. So it fails on all counts. And the Democrats produced a chart and had someone, a healthcare provider, on a conference call this week talking about how this would be an alternative that makes no sense to them and would be much worse than expanding Medicaid. Senate President Chuck Moore's response to that, essentially, he didn't exactly completely backpedal from this proposal, but he really said, it, as Gary pointed out, that it's a starting point, that the discussion will continue, and that let's not overheat the rhetoric now and eliminate the possibility of coming up with a New Hampshire solution. I think really what you saw is Senate President Chuck Morse's new approach to this issue that's slightly different than Peter Bragdon, who was former Senate President. I think Chuck Morse, at the end of the day, really wants to put together an alternative proposal that has credibility, so that even if a couple of Republicans ultimately go along with Governor Maggie Hassan and pass expanded Medicaid, Senate Republicans couldn't go to the voters and say, look, we had a plan. We wanted to involve the private insurance market more than they wanted government-run health care, and he thinks voters will prefer that option.
Interesting. Okay, let's take some more calls if we could, gentlemen. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. And Pat's calling in from Littleton. Hi, Pat. You're on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, Laura. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to mention that one of the difficulties that New Hampshire is facing is enrollment for the Obamacare program. They had an opportunity to take $3 million in federal marketing funds in the O'Brien.
Pat, are you still there? We seem to have lost you.
You're going to start to see people not sign, and they're setting it up. If you look at states like Oregon and Arizona and Iowa and Kansas, they have very effective marketing programs, and they're getting a big capture rate. New Hampshire hasn't even started that kind of thing yet.
Yeah, there's been some controversy, Pat, I'm sure you're aware, about how much money to allocate towards publicizing, letting people know, Dean Spiliotis, what the alternatives are. Thanks a lot, Pat, for calling in. Go ahead, Dean.
Right, and the legislature had the opportunity to take, I think, Pat said $3 million. I thought maybe it was $5 million. It's $5 million, I think, is the figure, in federal funds to, you know, publicize the exchanges, get people comfortable, do some citizen outreach, et cetera. And Republicans blocked that and didn't take the money. So, you know, this fits into the larger kind of pitch battle we've had over Obamacare that we've talked about here many Fridays, in which, you know, Republicans are looking to kind of slow down the implementation. They're looking to privatize as much as possible. I think the Medicaid discussion we just had is indicative of that. And you know, even though, as we've noted, even though this is a, you know, statute, it's law, so much of it seems to be in flux, really, because we don't know what to expect. It's such a major change in how we do healthcare in this country, and I think there's just a lot of concern about how the implementation is going to go. And you know, Republicans have looked for opportunities to slow it down, scuttle what they can, try to maybe eventually back away from some of Obamacare. And Pat mentioned that several million dollars is just one small example.
Okay, thanks a lot for that call. And again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. Gentlemen, I want to shift gears to another major story that was definitely dominating headlines this week, and that's this evolving Syria situation. New Hampshire's delegation had to keep up with this, as we all did. There was a lot of drama around this issue this week. And as I said, members of Congress were making statements and then having to alter those statements. Kevin, let's talk about our senators first, Senators Kelly Ayotte and Jean Shaheen. At this point, where do they say they stand on U.S. action in Syria?
Well, I think both of them very early on not only condemned the alleged use of chemical weapons by the Syrian president against the rebels, but also entertained the option of using military force in order to respond. Ultimately, Senator Kelly Ayotte came out against that proposal. She does not feel the president has articulated fully a plan of action that follows these strikes that would satisfy her that this couldn't develop into a bigger quagmire than it already looks like it could. Senator Jean Shaheen, the Democrat from Nashville, the senior member of the delegation, was one of the first Democrats in the U.S. Senate to come on board the Obama policy, and she's very much stuck there from the beginning. She does welcome these negotiations to try and have Russia step in and have these chemical weapons contained, turned over to international authorities and destroyed. But she's not wholly, she's pretty much as skeptical as the president is that this option is going to work.
Yeah. And how about our members of Congress, Gary Reno? What are they saying at this point? Again, the story, you know, seems to change a little bit every day.
It does. But Carol Shea Porter was very much against any kind of action in Syria. And McLean Custer has been sort of
grave concerns
and so on, but hasn't really said one way or the other exactly where she's going to be if that resolution does come forward at some point.
Is this a campaign issue in the fall? What do you think?
Oh, I think certainly it's a campaign issue.
Even though the fall, we're talking next fall, not this fall.
And we'll probably still be somehow involved somewhere there in the Middle East in a similar situation. So, it's certainly a campaign issue.
Well, certainly, Dean Spiliotis, Jeanne Shaheen's two possible rivals for re-election next year, Karen Testaman and Jim Rubins, have both sent out news releases saying her vote in favor is a big mistake. They call it Jeanne Shaheen's bombing war, I think is what Jim Rubins calls it.
Perhaps a little bit of an overstatement. You know, I think what's interesting here is, you know, Kevin mentioned this. If you go back a few weeks ago, Kelly Ayotte and Jeanne Shaheen sounded remarkably similar. The difference is Jeanne Shaheen was forced to go on record with a Senate Foreign Relations Committee vote in favor of that resolution. If Kelly Ayotte had been forced to vote several weeks ago, she might very well have supported that resolution, as did John McCain. We often see Kelly Ayotte working quite closely with John McCain and Lindsey Graham and others. So, you know, I think Senator Ayotte has had the benefit of watching kind of the political drama unfold after the last few weeks. It's been clear that support is flagging. People are unhappy with President Obama. His speech got mixed reviews on Tuesday night. So it's a lot easier for Kelly Ayotte to now come out and say, well, he's being incoherent. It's a much safer position in that respect to take. It's a legitimate position, but if she had been forced to vote a few weeks ago, we might have seen her vote in favor of some sort of limited strike. You know, interestingly enough, as Gary mentioned, Carol Shea Porter really is the only one who's kind of been consistently no. Annie Custer has hedged a bit, left herself a little bit of a wiggle room, probably trying to sort of see how this is going to play out. I still don't know that she has said definitively no at this point. It seems like she's kind of leaning that way.
Well, so they've got a little breathing room now with this.
And so, you know, I think that to get back to your original question about Rubens and Testerman, I think it'll be an issue. A lot of it depends on whether or not this diplomatic solution pans out. It's a nice opportunity for the Obama administration to kind of at least momentarily back away from kind of the circus in Congress. But we shall see.
You want to jump back in on there, Kevin?
Yeah, I was just going to say, Laura, that this vote obviously is a significant one when any member of Congress votes on using military force. And this region, as the president argued, certainly is strategic and important to our interests. You can make the case for that. And there was a moral debacle that occurred over there that horrified everyone. But at the end of the day, every member of Congress is looking at this through the prism of the next election. And in New Hampshire, there's a lot of war fatigue. And even among Obama supporters who voted for him twice in 2008 and 2012, that the reason they supported him was he was going to end the war in Iraq and bring the troops home from Afghanistan. And we've already had a military action in Libya, and now we're talking about a military strike against Syria. So that's why you're seeing, Carol Shea Porter is dealing strictly from an ideological point of view. She was an anti-Iraq war activist. That's why she got interested in politics. There's no surprise there. But Annie Custer does have to be very careful on this vote, and I fully suspect she would oppose it ultimately because of what I was speaking of. It could hurt her even among her base voters next year.
Mm.
Yeah, just one brief, broader observation. It's been fascinating for me to watch the shift in kind of the sort of median foreign policy position, particularly in the Republican Party and Congress. You think about where we were 15 or 20 years ago before Iraq and Afghanistan. Kelly Ayotte, John McCain, Jeanne Shaheen, very kind of standard support your president once you get outside the nation's borders type of kind of establishment position, a little hawkish, but fairly common. But now the party really has moved in this kind of almost isolationist, sort of the Rand Paul wing of the party. And you really see the impact it's had on the kinds of positions that people are taking and how voters feel about this war fatigue.
Well, and since you mentioned before Iraq and Afghanistan, we'd be remiss, gentlemen, if we didn't mention a sober anniversary in the Granite State this week of course, the 12th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. And just personally, it seems unbelievable that it's been that long. I remember it so well, as we all do. What sorts of observations, thoughts, reflections, Gary, did you hear from Granite Staters on the anniversary?
There were a number of ceremonies around the state. I know that the governor went around and she spoke at three of them. And very somber. And certainly everybody has not forgotten, even though it's been 12 years. No one has forgotten what's happened, and that's very clear.
They talk a lot about it in the schools. Both my kids came home saying, you know, that they had discussed it. So, and there were obviously, you know, these attacks affected the whole country. But there were some Granite Staters, Kevin, who died that day, given that the flights were out of Logan. So let's not forget them and their families.
Absolutely. I mean, Tom McGinnis was the co-pilot of American Airlines Flight 11, the first plane that crashed into the North Tower of the World Trade Center. And certainly I remember being at the State House that morning. We don't have a TV in the press room. We heard on the radio about this plane going into the North Tower. We went up to the Speaker's office in the State House, who has a television set, and we actually saw the second plane go into the South Tower. And I'll just never forget that experience and how it left all of us in the room very emotional. And I think Americans continue to recover from that incredible event.
All right. Well, again, the number for you to join us with your thoughts, reflections on that headline and other headlines that caught your attention this week is 1-800-892-6477. Send an email to exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. Dean, I did want to follow up very quickly with a story that keeps coming up this summer, and that's the West Nile virus, a mosquito-borne virus. There seems to be frequent reports of mosquitoes testing positive here or there around the state. What was new this week, Dean?
The first confirmed case of West Nile in the state this year in Chesterfield. And as you said, and I believe the person has or is recovering. Or
so
has
a human
recovered.
Case instead
yes,
of this mosquito
yes.
was positive.
Right. We often hear about, I mean, there have been multiple batches of mosquitoes that have tested positive for both West Nile and Eastern Equine Encephalitis, Triple E, around the state. But the actual rate of infection is much lower. For West Nile, this is only the sixth confirmed human case, I think, in 13 years since it was first identified.
So still very rare.
It's very rare. It gets a tremendous amount of coverage. I mean, there's certainly a public education component here about using, clearing standing water and using bug spray and things like that. And there are cases with both West Nile and particularly Triple E where it has been fatal. It does get a lot of coverage. This has not been a particularly big season, it seems, but we finally had one. And it typically is mainly August, September, on into sort of mid-October.
Okay. And Gary, you know, your newspaper editorialized, and I know reporters are separate from the editorial page, but I thought it was interesting. You know, Dean's right. There's been a tremendous amount of coverage of testing of mosquito pools, of spraying of mosquito populations. The union leader editorialized this morning, hey, you know, one person got West Nile so far this year, six people since the mid-2000s. On the other hand, maybe tens of thousands of people are getting Lyme disease from ticks. So are we barking up the wrong tree here?
Certainly. I mean, it's been an epidemic. Certainly Lyme disease has in the last few years. It's just been so prevalent. And it gets so little publicity, probably because it is so prevalent. But in terms of the effects of people in the state of New Hampshire, it's certainly had a lot more effect than West Nile or Triple E ever had, that's for sure.
All right. Well, I want to turn, gentlemen, from insect-borne illnesses to the business world. And Kevin Landrigan, big news in the business world here in New Hampshire this week. Public Service of New Hampshire has a new president, Bill Quinlan, who takes over at a time of tremendous challenges for this company, as we've talked about before, Kevin. Just give us a little background, please, on Bill Quinlan.
He's the senior vice president of Connecticut Power and Light, which is one of the companies, along with Public Service Company in New Hampshire, that are owned by Northeast Utilities of Berlin, Connecticut, the parent. Mr. Quinlan's been with CPL for almost 30 years. He was most recently in charge of emergency preparedness for the utility, which included in Connecticut responses to Hurricane Sandy, which obviously left a lot of people in southern Connecticut without power and a lot of damage to private and public property. He he sort of has a very similar profile, frankly, to the man he's replacing, Gary Long, who has been the president and CEO for 13 years. He's left the company to concentrate on his support for the Northern Pass project. Gary Long very much came up through the ranks of Northeast Utilities, and I think they've identified Mr. Quinlan as someone who can come to New Hampshire just like Gary Long did and provide the same kind of stewardship.
Right, and we spoke to Gary Long on Monday about the Northern Pass. Go ahead, Gary.
He's taking over a company that's really facing an awful lot of challenges.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're going to have to be – they're transitioning into basically becoming more of a distribution and transmission company. The power customers are leaving in droves. And it's really a company that faces a lot of challenges, and it's going to be a very different company in the next 10 years than we see right now.
There's this issue of divestiture that we've talked about, the state legislature saying, Gary, correct me if I'm wrong, look, PSNH, you need to sell off some of these coal-fired power plants. They're bringing you down. And
I mean, it's the only publicly traded utility in New England that still owns its power generation supply. You know, it's sort of like a hybrid company that's now, I mean, it didn't seem like it was such a big deal at the time, but now we're seeing all of the problems that have resulted from that, particularly with the price of natural gas going so low, so bringing down the cost of electricity while these few coal and oil-fired power plants are much more expensive.
Yeah, and next week on The Exchange or the week after, we're working on a whole show, Gary, on that issue of natural gas and how it's just changed energy markets here in New England. So more on that next week or the week after. Dean Spiliotis, I wanted to ask you about a Concord story that received national press. And this is the case of a Concord mom who's mourning prayers for the safety of her children at Concord High School and all the kids and staff at Concord High. Made huge headlines, got national groups involved. My goodness, remind us, how come? Why was this such a big deal?
Yeah, very interesting story. It started in February of this year when Lizarda Urena, this Concord resident who has two children at the high school, decided to start praying every morning for the safety of her children and also for the school and all the school in general. First, she did it out loud. And some people complained, and then she was asked to do it silently, which she did for a long time. Then she was told she could no longer do it. That got picked up nationally, got a lot of coverage, both kind of pro and anti, sort of religious groups and praying in public.
And Gary, excuse me, Dean, I want to hear more on this.
Yeah, sure.
We're going to go to a short break, but I want to give you more of a chance to talk about how this got resolved this week and what some of those national groups who were promoting this issue, pro and con, had to say about it. So hold on, more after a short break. Stay with us.
This is NHPR. It's 9:39. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. President Obama hits the pause button on Syrian airstrikes. Debate among House Republicans delays a vote on government spending. Then the U.S. and Russia work on a deal to disarm Syria of chemical weapons. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and support also comes to us from Ford & Associates PA, providing representation for businesses, trustees, and institutional creditors in bankruptcy and troubled debt matters, Ford & Associates PA. And the New Hampshire Charitable Foundation, helping generous donors give back to their community since 1962, online at nhcf.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. We're looking at some of the top headlines of the week that caught our attention, and we want to hear from you. What were some of the news items that grabbed your attention this week? Your questions, comments, and thoughts are welcome at 1-800-892-6477. Send a short email to exchange at nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. And Dean Spiliotis, just before the break, you were catching us up on a Concord story that received national attention. Again, this is the mom who was praying every morning at the steps of Concord High School for the safety of her children and all the kids and staff at Concord High. You were talking about how national groups started to weigh in on this. Yes, she has a right. No, she doesn't. Go ahead, Dean, and finish.
That's right. I mean, this story really felt like it was starting to kind of escalate over the summer when these national groups started weighing in, you know, the possibility of filing lawsuits in order to either stop her from praying or to allow her to pray. Certainly an opportunity for these groups to raise money, maybe turn this into a test case for the U.S. Supreme Court. But at least for now, the after initially telling the mother that she would not be able to pray silently on school grounds, the superintendent and the administration have now said, for now, she can continue to do it, and they're going to sort of evaluate it on kind of a day-to-day basis. So it sort of temporarily has resolved the issue. I don't know that that means that it's permanently resolved. There still may be opportunity for some of these national groups to weigh in with a lawsuit or other types of actions. So for now, she's continuing to pray at the high school.
So for now, it's been resolved locally between the individuals involved. What was the reaction of some of these big national groups that had weighed in on this?
Yeah, I think probably a little bit of disappointment. I think there was a sense that this is how a lot of these national advocacy groups function. They look for test cases, even at a very local level, that they can then kind of turn into sort of a larger argument, either moving it up through the courts or kind of a sort of blending it into sort of a larger political agenda that includes fundraising as well. So I think a little bit of disappointment. Again, this is a sort of a temporary solution, and we'll see where it goes from here.
Yeah, well, Kevin Landergan, another Concord story that also got national attention. I don't know what's in the water here in Concord, but for some reason, there's been a couple stories that have really grabbed attention not only around the state but around the country. This is the Concord City Council voting, Kevin, to accept a federal grant for an armored vehicle known as a Bearcat. They put off this vote because it was pretty hot, but they finally decided, yes, we will accept this grant. We will take this vehicle. Chief Duval said, look, it's just going to replace a similar vehicle that has gotten too old. Why did this attract so much attention, Kevin?
Well, I think it did touch a nerve both here and nationally, kind of across the ideological spectrum, when Chief Duval, in the grant application, listed groups that have not had any history of violent action, like the New Hampshire Free Staters, Occupy New Hampshire, as among those groups that this kind of vehicle is needed to respond to. And that unleashed a lot of protest, both here and nationally, from these groups, and sort of only continued and almost underline the narrative of people who are against vehicles such as this, that it's excess federal spending, piling more money onto more debt and deficit that we don't have. It's allowing our local military to act like paramilitary organizations.
You mean our local police.
Local police to act like an adjunct of a military operation in using the Bearcat to respond to that. I think once Chief Duval changed the application, put on file a different request, which eliminated any references to these groups, essentially gave the Concord City Council the political cover they needed. I think this chief is very popular at City Hall and with the City Council. And once he acknowledged that, look, I shouldn't have made that part of the application, I think they take him on his word that he's going to use this armored vehicle very sparingly for the 20 communities that make requests to use it. And
it's not just Concord. That's important to point out.
That's right. Throughout central New Hampshire, this will be available. And all these communities will also pay to maintain this vehicle as well.
Again, our phone number for you to join us with our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup is 1-800-892-6477. Send us a short email at exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page. And gentlemen, let's turn now to a favorite sport here in New Hampshire, and that's presidential politics. I'm not talking about that Patriots game last night. And to you, Gary Reno, New York Republican Congressman Peter King has been visiting the state. What's he doing and saying here in the Granite State?
Well, he's sort of saying he's running for president. He kind of let it out that he's pretty much thinking about it and kind of decided that he's going to do that. So he's not the first one to sort of do that. There have been others, and it seems to be a steady parade that we're seeing now, and it seems a little early, but, you know, the presidential election was only less than a year ago, but we're certainly seeing the parade here in New Hampshire a little earlier than usual, but it's kind of typical.
Well, give us a little political bio of Representative King, if you could, Gary.
I'm not really that familiar with him.
Kevin, go ahead.
Yeah, he's Peter King is a New York congressman, kind of comes from the bolt of the typical Northeast Republican, fiscally conservative, socially moderate. He represents a district that's a very swing district in New York that has heavy, for example, organized labor in its population, so he's often very pro-union. What's interesting about Peter King now, particularly in the context of what's happening in Syria, is to Dean's earlier point, Peter King sort of underlines this raging debate that's going on in the Republican Party. Peter King was one of the first members of Congress in the House to come out in support of the military strike.
In Syria.
And in fact, nonetheless, he's been very critical of this president and how he's handled and sold that policy. And in fact, while he was here in New Hampshire, essentially told us that if the vote was now, the U.S. House absolutely would reject his request for military action because he's been so feckless. But Peter King, his message is going right at that sort of isolationist agenda we hear from Rand Paul and others in the Republican Party who essentially want to end the foreign military interventions.
Dean, didn't Representative King make big headlines, I don't know, 8 months ago, a year ago, for some hearings that Democrats said, fairly or unfairly, were anti-Muslim?
Yeah, this is a radicalization. King? Yes, he said he was have these hearings that are about the radicalization of Islam in the United States and the issue of whether or not to build mosques, build a mosque near Ground Zero. Yeah, he's an interesting fellow. He's been in Congress for 10 years. As Kevin says, he represents this. 20 years, not 10 years. I misspoke. Since 1993, so that's 20 years. A long time Republican from kind of the central part of Long Island, part of Nassau, part of Suffolk County, has a background in national security, was on the Intelligence Committee, former chair of the Homeland Security Committee. He's 69, which is kind of on the old side to run for president these days, but he is hawkish. It's interesting. I knew he was going to run for president because I heard him on one of the Sunday morning shows this week, and he said, he's in favor of action in Syria, but he said the president needs to be more of a commander in chief and less of a community organizer. So that was like a throwback to 2008 and Sarah Palin all over again. So I knew that he's, and in fact, the host said, well, now why did you have to say that? I mean, clearly you're running for president. What does that mean? So he is one pole of this debate in the Republican Party. He's much more of a traditional Republican hawk, and he's mixed it up pretty good with some of the folks on the other side like Rand Paul.
Okay, well, and also on the political front, Gary Reno here in New Hampshire. This just came out yesterday. Longtime political analyst, lawyer, Republican Brad Cook may run for governor.
Yes, Brad said he's giving it serious consideration.
You surprised?
Yeah, I am somewhat, but then again, not, because if you're the Republican Party and you're looking around for somebody who will do a credible job, get 42-45% of the vote, certainly somebody like Brad would be somebody that you would go to. He's been a stalwart of the party for years and years and years. Certainly not typical of the current makeup of the party. He's certainly much more of a moderate Republican than we see than the people that are running it now, but has been very loyal, has done a lot of work for the party. Most people like Brad, and it would be interesting to see how well he does in a primary if he has a credible conservative candidate running against him. But he certainly is somebody that, if you were looking for somebody to make a good case for the Republicans against Maggie Hassan in 2014, he wouldn't be a bad choice.
Well, and I'm quoting your colleague John DeStazo's article, Gary. He interviewed Brad Cook about this. Cook called Hassan a, quote, fine lady, and said in her first term she hadn't, quote, offended anyone particularly. In this article, Cook also tells DeStazo that if he ran for governor, he would not take the traditional pledge to veto a broad-based sales or income tax as Hassan has. That makes it interesting.
That would make it very interesting, wouldn't it?
Kevin, do you want to comment?
Yeah, certainly. It's been a long time since over 10 years, almost 15, that we would have a Republican candidate, a serious Republican candidate running for governor, not taking the pledge. And I heard a number of, responding to this story, conservative Republicans the other day muse about how wonderful it would be if Brad Cook decided to run as an independent in the general election in 2014, thereby pulling away pro-income tax Democrats away from Maggie Hassan so that the Republican nominee for governor, whoever that would be, would have a much more credible chance of knocking her off. I think we're going to see as many potential candidates and scenarios as there may be days left between now and the primary.
Really? So in other words, lots of people will come out of the woodwork and test the waters
here. I think lots of people are going to think about it, absolutely. As Gary pointed out, there's just There's a wide open opportunity here for folks. And the race for New Hampshire governor is different than most states, which is to say it doesn't cost a whole lot of money to run a credible election. excuse me. It's a two-year term with limited powers, unlike a lot of other states. So, so particularly for business people, folks who have a business background, maybe retired, have always thought about public service, it's always been an intriguing opportunity. That's why we've had folks like Craig Benson get into this race and others try and become governor who had no experience in politics before.
Wow, interesting. And gentlemen, there's no graceful way for me to transition between talking about the race for governor and this next story. So Dean Spiliotis, I'm just going to go for it. There was a salmonella outbreak that made news this week because it was so unusual. You know, usually we hear about these problems being transmitted by chicken or eggs. This was transmitted by dog treats made in New Hampshire. Now, you're a dog owner, a big dog lover. How did this happen?
This is actually not as unusual as it sounds. A lot of dog owners know and have known for many years that you can sometimes contract salmonella from handling, in particular, rawhide treats. But
see,
any
I did
kind
not
of dog
know
treat,
that.
Yeah, it's funny because for many decades, you know, for decades, I would just give my dogs rawhide treats, bones, et cetera. Never really thought about it. In the last few years, a number of these stories have come out, and sort of encouraging dog owners to kind of wash their hands after they handle some of these rawhide based or jerky. This was a chicken jerky treat made locally here in New Hampshire. About 24 people were sickened with salmonella. It's something, you know, in the dog world, there has been a little bit of kind of education about needing to kind of wash up after you handle some of these treats. It doesn't happen a lot, but it does happen. So it's something I've been aware of at least in the last few years.
So wait, again, I'm not a dog owner.
Yeah.
So but help me out here. So you give your dog this treat.
Yeah.
He doesn't get sick.
No.
But
you
some
can
salmonella gets
you can
on your hands,
exactly.
And then if you happen to put your hands near your eyes, nose, mouth.
It's just like any other type of salmonella contracting. It just gets on your hands from the treat. You know, a lot of these treats can be kind of flaky and moist and have different kinds of bacteria. And, it's good to wash your hands. But as I said, I handled dog treats for decades with no problem, but I have heard more stories in recent years like this.
All right. Well, and I'd like to close out with a few lighter stories, including the Old Farmer's Almanac predicting a cold, snowy winter for New Hampshire. Now, NHPR's Brady Carlson will have more on that tonight on All Things Considered if you're interested. But just real quickly, Kevin Landrigan, how often is the Old Farmer's Almanac right? Those venerable folks based in Dublin.
Yeah, the editors of the Almanac claim that it's 80% accurate, which I suspect most people would think is higher than their typical nightly weather forecast they might see on local television. But many experts have disputed that percentage, pointing out, for example, last year that the Almanac predicted a very cold winter in New England, and of course we had a very mild one.
Although the snow wasn't bad.
No.
As a Nordic skier, I had a lot more opportunities last winter than I did the winter before. Well, and as we close out, by the way, congratulations to Miss New Hampshire, Samantha Russo, who won the talent portion of the Miss America contest by singing a song from the musical Funny Girl. So congratulations to Samantha Russo. Gentlemen, I always like to end this New Hampshire News Roundup Hour by looking at what you're going to be watching next week. And Gary Rayner, I'll start with you. What are some of the big stories on your radar?
Well, the big story continues to be the Medicaid Expansion Commission. They have two meetings next week as they start to try to sit down and hammer out some sort of recommendations that they're looking to come up with here by the middle of next month.
So is it fair to say, Gary, phase two, they've heard testimony from all sorts of people, and now what?
Now they're going to be sitting down with their consultants and working through this outline to arrive at some recommendations, you know, how they're going to do that. Supposedly the meeting Tuesday, they're going to kind of have this open discussion and set goals that they want to achieve through expansion.
And even if this study or report, Gary, says 100%, yes, we love Medicaid expansion, it probably won't happen. But even if it did, it's still up to the legislature.
Oh,
right?
It is. I mean, and it's good. There's going to be a special session of the legislature to act on it.
This fall.
This fall. Yeah.
Kevin Landrigan, how about you? What are you going to be watching especially closely next week?
Well, actually, next week is kind of, except for the Medicaid Commission meetings, it's kind of a slower week at the State House, except for in terms of major developments, but there's dozens and dozens of legislators running around. This past week was the first week they could actually file their proposals for 2014.
Oh, bill filing has begun.
It has begun in the House. It doesn't begin until September 25th in the Senate. So at the end of this week, beginning of next, we'll get our first look at that first batch of ideas, which, as we know in New Hampshire, can range from the very serious to the very bizarre.
Well, and it's always kind of fun to see what sorts of bills lawmakers file, right, Kevin? In some years, we see up to, what, 1,000, 1,200?
Right.
Lots of bills.
Yeah, and usually in the second year of a session, we see fewer than in the first year, and we had just under 900 this past year. So I suspect we'll see a fewer amount. But election year sessions tend to produce a lot more emotional issues than in the first year when the budget dominates. So the second year session always tends to be more partisan, more heated than the first.
And Dean, how about you? What are you going to be keeping track of?
Well, in addition to looking at continuing to look at how our delegation responds to the situation in Syria, I'm going to follow this health exchange ramp up. I increasingly believe that these health exchanges are going to be kind of at the center of the debate in the near term. Even the Medicaid expansion discussion is now starting, at least on the Republican side, to delve into pushing some of these folks into these exchanges. So
there's a link between those two.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be kind of the first real test of the ramping up of Obamacare.
Wow, and lots for us to unravel. And as I said, if you're interested more, again, in the health exchanges and some of the issues that Dean mentioned, we are going to be talking about the health exchanges Wednesday on The Exchange. So you can join us for that. Guys, thank you very much for being here. I really appreciate it. Gary Raynaud, good to see you.
Good to see you, Laura.
Gary Raynaud, State House reporter for the Union Leader and New Hampshire Sunday News. Kevin Landrigan, always a pleasure. Thank you for your time.
Have a great weekend, Laura.
Kevin Landrigan, political reporter for the Telegraph of Nashua. Dean Spiliotis, thank you for being here as well.
Sure thing. Thanks, Laura.
Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the Schools of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com, and this is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
Next week on The Exchange, with the recent debate over Syria, we look at how presidents and Congress have long tussled over constitutional war powers. Later, the rollout of the Affordable Care Act's health insurance exchanges gets pretty bumpy in the Granite State. And celebrated New Hampshire author Howard Mansfield on his new book, Dwelling in Possibility, Searching for the Soul of Shelter. Email us at nhpr.org and join us all next week for The Exchange, every morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
Diane Rehm Show and the Friday News Roundup next at 10 on NHPR, where support comes from UR members and from New Hampshire Humanities Council, presenting Colin McCann, author of Let the Great World Spin, at its annual dinner on October 28th at the Center of New Hampshire. Details at nhhc.org. And Comcast Business, partnering with businesses of any size to provide scalable technology solutions that keep pace with growth and success. More at business.comcast.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVU Concord.
89.1. WEVS Nashua.
88.3. WEVH Hanover.
91.3. WEVN Keene.
90.7. WEVC Gorham.
107.1. WEVJ Jackson.
99.5. WEVF Colebrook.
90.3. And WEVQ Littleton.
91.9. And online at nhpr.org.
Good morning. It's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR, I'm Tom Gelton of NPR, sitting in for Diane Rehm. President Obama takes to the airwaves this week. Instead of asking Congress to approve a strike in Syria, he calls for diplomacy. Freed from having to vote on Syria, the focus in Washington returns to fiscal issues. House Leader John Boehner looks for support from Democrats to help pass spending measures in the House. If Congress doesn't agree...